Welcome to the Campfire Committee, Outside and Fireside, a podcast to explore and discover the joy of camping and being in the great outdoors.
I'm Allison Logan.
And I'm Steph Pavan. We're your hosts.
This season, we're stepping up our camping game and going beyond the basics. Whether you're an expert camper or you're new to all of this, we're creating a camping community to share the many lessons and stories, tips and tricks, and all the fun that comes with getting outside and fireside.
We're bringing you into the world of camping and inviting you to join the Campfire Committee community. Remember to download, subscribe, and follow us on social at the Campfire Committee so you don't miss an episode or any new fun bits.
This podcast is about camping, and though we camp primarily in Ontario, we would like to recognize the Indigenous past, present, and future with a land acknowledgement for Toronto, where we live and make this podcast.
We recognize that we are on the traditional territory of many nations, including the Mississaugas of the Credit, the Anishinaabeg, the Chippewa, the Haudenosaunee, and the Wendat peoples, and this city is now home to many diverse First Nations, Inuit, and Métis people.
We also acknowledge that Toronto is covered by Treaty 13, signed by the Mississaugas of the Credit, and the Williams Treaty, signed with multiple Mississaugas and Chippewa bands.
We always aim to grow our understanding of and respect for the diverse First Nations, Inuit, and Métis people in Toronto, Ontario, and Canada. And we seek to forge better relationships and celebrate this land with those whom have historically called this place their home as we visit these places to camp. And we encourage our listeners to do the same.
Now, let's light this campfire. Welcome to our first episode of the second season of the Campfire Committee, Outside and Fireside. This episode, we want to get into talking about different types of camping, something we really didn't dive into last season.
Yeah, we might have spent like 60 seconds talking about it, so now we are doing an entire episode on the topic.
For a quick review, last season in a nutshell, or a hard-sided camper, if you will, was about car camping, which is a kind of camping where you drive up to your site and you camp there. Yes, you may have to walk in or walk down, or you may have a split-level site. But for argument's sake, what you need, you can keep in your car, and it's not ever going to be that far away. You may or may not have electrical, but drinking water, outhouses, and comfort stations with showers will be available throughout the park. Unless, of course, there is a pandemic-related closure, or if the water has tested unsafe. Note that the water taps will be, or should be, better be, clearly marked when the water is unsafe to drink. In locations where this has been the case, all the water sources were well marked.
But that's about it. You've got to bring everything else with you. Anyway, since we spent an entire season talking about car camping, we recommend tuning into season one for more on all car camping basics, from booking a site, packing and setting up, to food prep, tent selection, and common myths and misconceptions.
Oh yeah, need to knock some of those down.
Mm-hmm. Download and listen to any of our season one episodes for more.
As well as so much more that we've got coming up for season two.
Yes, season two, this season, we're going beyond the basics, as car camping is sort of the baseline. It is at least for the purposes of our discussion. It's one of the friendliest ways to get into camping, requiring the least specialized gear and skill. It may be as far into camping as you'll ever get, but that doesn't mean there's not more to discuss and much more out there.
So let's start by getting a little further out there into the wild and begin with backcountry camping.
Whoa, really getting into the wild here today. And starting off with one of the best ways to truly experience the wild, pure, unadulterated Mother Nature as it is.
Mm-hmm.
When you're camping in the backcountry, sites are only accessible by boat, by foot, or even by plane.
Some of the most remote and beautiful spots are those that you have to get yourself to, whether by hiking or paddling. Sites accessible by foot are deemed hike-in. Note the difference from a walk-in site. These measurements are going to be in kilometers or miles rather than in meters or feet.
When you're hiking in, you've got to carry everything you need on your back. If you're solo, that's all on your back, in your pack. Remember everything we listed in our Get Packing episode? We're definitely referring to things on the minimal side here. Clothing will be day clothes and night clothes, maybe some extra socks and underwear. Your tent, sleeping bag, and sleeping pad will be as small as possible, and as light as possible, too.
Yeah, And if you're camping in a group or a pair, you can split those supplies between the packs. Not all the heavy items need to be carried by one person. There are heavy items that can be split, like the food or the cooking equipment and maybe the water. And you won't be bringing any extra luxuries. Or you will, the first time and only that first time.
Oh yeah, that's true.
You can also get all that gear into a canoe or kayak in waterproof bags, of course, and get out into the backcountry on the water.
Oh, those paddle insights.
Yes. In some cases, you may be able to take a motorboat to your site or nearer to your site as well. For example, at Algonquin Provincial Park on Opeongo Lake, which is a large lake.
Fun fact, Opeongo is the largest lake in the oldest provincial park in the most populated province of the second biggest country in the world.
Oh, thank you for that.
You're welcome.
And we've paddled it so we can confirm that it's big.
Yeah.
Given its size, motorboats are permitted and water taxis are available for pickup and drop off too. You can take a taxi or your own motorboat right to and from any site on the lake or be dropped off at a portage point, skipping the first 20K or so of your trip.
Which gets you that much further into the backcountry that much quicker.
And that can be the difference between exploring a big lake or being able to get even further into the interior.
These types of trips definitely require specialized gear, more skill and or different skill, and more planning and preparation. You can't just run to the store if you want an extra snack or you forgot an ingredient or a key piece of gear.
You can't just refill on ice. You can't even get ice.
No, no ice in the backcountry.
Yeah, you gotta get your own firewood. Some things have to be thought of entirely differently, like your food. Anyways, keep in mind that some of your car camping gear can translate over to backcountry, but just like others we'll talk about today, there are pieces of gear and equipment that are specific to each type of camping.
All gear that you use for the backcountry can be used for car camping, but the reverse definitely isn't the same. Consider that when you're investing in some gear that favors one experience or the other if you have an interest in doing both.
In a couple of episodes, we'll go over backcountry basics in much more detail. But for now, I think that sums it up.
So let's drop the temperature on this camping scale and talk about winter camping, as it deserves a category all its own. Remember, we're from Ontario, Canada. Today, it is minus 20 degrees Celsius outside. Even up here, most campgrounds close for winter, or at least the majority do. There are some that stay open and have roofed accommodations or electrical sites. Typically, trailer spots are available, and some sites may be open for winter tent camping.
Yeah, tent camping. In the winter?
Well, there are hot tents, and you definitely want the proper outerwear if you're going to be going out in that kind of weather. Just like when you go camping in the summer, there are so many different kinds of things to do outside in the winter. And the places that you frequent in the hot months are going to look and feel very different covered in snow and ice.
There's definitely an entire episode worth of material to talk about on this kind of camping too. You know, camping in different seasons. So for more details on that, tune into another future promised episode coming this season. We're going to say that a couple times this episode, guys. But we promise there's a whole season to back it up.
We're going beyond the basics. This is
just an introduction.
So next up, in terms of the different types of camping, we're going to talk a little bit about crown land or public land camping. And this is a subsect of all the previously mentioned types of camping we've gone over. It's less really of a type of camping, and it refers more to a location. It requires some knowledge of the public land, the access roads, or the routes, which, really, people don't necessarily want to share. Maybe I'm just being a pessimist here, but I always think, imagine driving X number of hours to find someone else set up in the spot that you were headed to. What if you had driven there and then paddled or hiked? And how many spots are you going to have in your mind in case of the potential of somebody being on that site?
Yeah, for me, the fear of the unknown in that aspect alone isn't thrilling. Sounds like a terrible time. I like to book my site and know where I'm going.
Totally get you're going to get some of the most beautiful places I've heard in some of these remote locations on public or crown land. But I feel like it's more if you know, you know. It's like this secret circle. Sometimes people may invite you into that circle and maybe you've searched hard enough that you can find some of these gems all on your own. Hopefully some of our listeners can pipe in with their suggestions for places that we should explore, because I do think this is something that we really want to see more of and find some of these hidden gems ourselves, but can't do it alone.
I know. Imagine pulling up to a Primo site and you're all alone in the wilderness.
Amazing.
Divine.
Ugh, so good.
I know there's the Crownland Atlas, but we're still waiting for our invite and fighting the provincial park booking system time and time again until we get one.
Ugh. Okay, so let's swing the other way now and get ourselves a little bit more comfortable. Many camping enthusiasts will say that car camping isn't really authentic. Okay, we're just going to roll our eyes at that one. It's just different, if you ask me. Same way as pulling up to a campsite in a 32-foot RV is different than pulling in and setting up your tent.
Which is a perfect segue into one different type of more comfortable camping, which we've mentioned in season one is there's quite a bit of overlap. From most alike to least alike, there's tent trailers, hybrid trailers, hard trailers, utility trailer conversions, RVs, tiny homes, van life, schoolies, and so many more, I'm sure. Even though they are quite similar to standard car camping, they've got one key difference. Depending on the type of trailer you got, you may be able to pull into your site, hop out of your vehicle, and light a fire. You may have to pop up the trailer or portions of the trailer, but essentially when you get there, you're ready to relax.
That reminds me of this family that we saw at Craigleith Provincial Park on Thanksgiving weekend, who had this utility trailer converting into their camping all-in-one. It even included a couple of built-in beds as their sleeping space. They were able to pull into their campsite, and while they had a little bit of setup to do, it was really just putting up an awning or a tarp and their cooking gear. Other than that, they were all set. Plus, when you think about it, when they get home, storing all that gear is easy. All that goes into the utility trailer and away it goes. You really just have to think about then where to store that utility trailer.
And that's not so easy if you live in an apartment or a city center or simply just don't have the parking spot. A small detail, you've also got to tow the thing.
True, yes. And so there are some obvious limitations and drawbacks, one of which can be the storage and another being the cost.
Mm-hmm.
These types of camping vehicles and conversions are going to cost you a lot more than a tent and some others like extra waterproofing and tarps and ropes in terms of equipment. On top of all of that, you've got to have a means to tow it. And then there's the question of where it lives when you're not camping. It's more difficult to drive an RV or tow a trailer than just driving a regular vehicle. Maintenance is something that's going to happen with all of your camping gear. And the bigger the vehicle or the trailer, the more maintenance can become necessary.
It can also cost a lot more. And that's exactly what it sounded like to me. Personally, I see myself maybe ending up going the tent trailer route.
I love a tent trailer and spent many childhood summers in one. While on a personal level, I love the idea of a van life or school bus conversion, Ryan and I have decided that for the simplicity, ultimately the cost and the ongoing maintenance, that we'll most likely at some point purchase a utility trailer and do some customizations for some storing of some gear and having a place to sleep. But we'll continue to use our tent for camping for the most part and have this trailer to lug everything else around and have an easier time packing the car that way too when you're putting everything in a utility vehicle. That's a future idea once, you know, we figure out storage and, you know, all of that stuff that we already talked about.
And then it would just be hitch and go.
It's not quite that easy. But having camped in a tent trailer for over 30 years, we thought we'd ask someone who could speak a bit more to that.
That's right. Back for another season of extra tips and tricks, as if she doesn't get enough of camping. Camper Sue will be joining us again with her advice and wild stories.
Woo!
Sue's Allison's mom and a lifelong camper extraordinaire.
Since it's something neither of us do ourselves, we always turn to my mom for advice when it comes to towing a trailer and trailer camping in general. Welcome back, Camper Sue. What have you got to share with our listeners on trailer camping?
Well, 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 here we are back, season two, and this is Camper Sue. So we're talking types of camping. Well, as you ladies touched on, there are so many different ways to trailer camp. My personal experience is mostly the pop-up trailer camping that I've done for 30 plus years. Even at that, ours is a pretty basic pop-up setup. We don't have a bathroom or a water heater. We've never used water in our Coleman pop-up. But getting off the ground and being, quote, inside when it's cool, wet, or buggy has made pop-up camping our go-to. Pop-ups require setup time that is probably equivalent to setting up your tent, maybe a little more. It's setting up the other optional things that you tend to do tent camping anyways, that takes up the extra time. With the one exception of once the pop-up is popped up, you can actually be inside. Then if you needed to get yourself sorted and organized, then you have the luxury of a roof over your head. If you're doing a road trip, then your setup can be very quick and easy. And I think that's mentioned later in another episode. About 15 years ago, I had the privilege of doing a road trip from Toronto to Nova Scotia with a group of friends in a Class C motorhome. I was the driver for the most part while the others cycled. This was really my only experience with grey water, which is the holding tank for sinks and shower drain, and black water, which is liquid and solid waste, and the dumping process. While I observed it closely for future reference, I didn't actually do the necessary chore, thanks to my friend Bill. I guess my best advice is to consider your needs now and future, and to ensure your tow vehicle can handle the type of trailer you are considering. A too small or underpowered vehicle is just plain dangerous and something that you could get yourself or others injured. So do your research.
Never ceases to amaze me how she comes up with something we never would have thought of.
I know. Every single time. We can forgive ourselves, though. We're really tent campers for the time being.
Mm-hmm.
Now, let's push a little further into comfort camping territory and talk roofed accommodations within parks and campgrounds. Yurts, cabins, farmhouses, there are tons of different types of roofed accommodations available at provincial parks through Airbnb, Vrbo, etc.
At provincial parks in Ontario, these types of accommodations are pretty few and far between, and they definitely get booked up quickly too.
I did not realize how lucky I was to snag one last minute last year. For the end of November, no less. That said, these places are pretty basic. Bare-bones spaces to sleep, and spend some time hanging out indoors if you need to. There are beds with standard vinyl-covered mattresses. We had two bunks with a double below and a twin-up top so it could sleep six. There's a table and plastic chairs, as well as a heater and one electrical outlet. Emphasis on that one. Outside, you've got a deck, barbecue with a side burner, and a fire pit. Washroom facility was open nearby, and potable water was only available there.
When you're used to tent or even trailer camping, it's great to be able to pull into a campsite and boom, you're basically ready to go.
I hadn't ever been, so I brought way too much. But you could pack pretty basic. Stove and fuel not required. Bedding, personal gear, food, and your camping.
For another example that's not provincial park related, a couple of winters ago, I stayed at a Cabinscape tiny house in eastern Ontario. I decided to do this solo a few days away to have a little bit of a mental break in nature, and this Cabinscape off-the-grid tiny house was exactly what I was looking for. Their tiny houses have everything you need to make yourself comfortable and enjoy getting into the woods in a really cozy spot that has some kind of almost glamping spin to it, I guess. The backup generator is there to help out in case the weather impacts the solar panels, and there's a little mini fridge and lights and a heater, so you'll be glad for that backup, especially in the winter. There's also a gas stove, a barbecue, and an indoor compostable toilet in each of their cabins. This is not a sponsored ad or anything like that, but just truly loved my experience at that place.
With accommodations like that, cost is higher than car camping or backcountry, but the gear required is a lot less. And you don't have to store anything.
Yeah, true.
This can be a really accessible, great way to experience shoulder season camping in campgrounds. For many, the roofed accommodations are a great way to visit parks and test out camping any time of the year without investing in all the necessary gear.
To flip that equation and get a camping experience where there is more gear required, but typically at a much lower cost.
I see where you're going with this one.
Yep, it's group camping. We're talking about more than one household, likely a few, and probably on more than one site or on a single group camping site.
That's another big topic.
Yep.
So for now, we'll cover some key differences. At Ontario Provincial Parks, there are group campsites. These sites can accommodate much larger groups, typically 20 plus people.
And some of these sites are really quite spectacular. Often they can be isolated from the rest of a campground and be equipped with lots of their own picnic tables and their own vault toilets or sinks and have a water tap of their own.
And of course, a fire pit with lots of space for a big campfire. They are ideal for family reunions, groups of friends, or like we used to do, groups of kids from the city.
Ooh! So just note that these sites have not been available to book since the COVID-19 pandemic began. However, we're ever so hopeful that this will change in the future.
Like so many others. Group camping can also mean a coordinated group of campers on several sites, cooking together, splitting costs, etc. We could really go on forever. And again, we promise a full episode on this topic in the future.
Okay, so let's round out this discussion with one of the more trendy words of in the outdoor space in this 21st century of ours, which I even just said myself a couple of minutes ago. Glamping. From platform tents to yurts to tree houses to glass igloos or ice igloos, tiny homes in the woods, glamping is somewhere above just plain old camping as it's glamorous. But it's most likely to have fewer or no amenities like you would see in a hotel. Generally, it's somewhere in the middle. Glamping itself can range from a more comfortable version of camping to being basically a five-star all-inclusive experience in nature.
You could have full-blown beds, electrical, running water, kitchens, toilets, fireplaces, wood-burning stoves, and hopefully there are views and privacy and whatever else was on the booking website.
Glamping will get you into the outdoors, mostly. Could just be a canvas tent on a wood platform with some cots and a table and chairs. Pretty much guaranteed with a glamping scenario, you're going to get a roof, but it may end there.
As a girl guide, we definitely did a trip like this. I'm pretty sure it was at the African Lion Safari.
Cool.
We had one of those canvas tents on the platform, and there was a fire pit and picnic tables, but that had to be it.
On the flip side, it could be quite luxurious. It can be nicer than your run-of-the-mill hotels. I've been looking up a couple of these places as potential ideas for wedding venues, and holy smokes, there are some gorgeous ones out there.
I can only imagine.
Oh, jeez. Before we end, let's swing back over to the other side of the camping, kinds of camping spectrum. Okay, if the birds didn't quite explain it to you, some other types of extreme camping that are mostly practiced by highly skilled, highly motivated individuals in extreme environments and climates, they often require physical training and lots of specialized gear.
Examples include mountaineering. Climbing mountains doesn't happen in one day. At least not the big ones. People who climb Mount Everest and the like, they've got a camp. Base camp can be an entire trip in itself. Then you still gotta face the rest of the mountain.
Less about getting up the mountain and more about finding remote places to ski down the mountain is backcountry skiing. A popular day activity, but beyond that, sometimes skiers will camp and hike their way out to explore even more remote locations. It's an adventure itself getting to the best places on the mountain.
But beware. Hiking, camping, and skiing in locales as such can bring you into areas with avalanches. A cousin of mine loves to do this, but was also dug out of an avalanche by another adventurer.
Oh, wow.
Both of whom were highly skilled and highly motivated. Prerequisites for activities with this much risk.
Don't forget your helmet.
Safety is always first. Remote jobs may require camping. Yes, there are often work camps, more dorm-style accommodations for employees in remote locations like mines, but sometimes there's literally camping involved in work. Remember Bushman?
Yes, I remember Bushman.
Anyway, we met someone, while camping, of course, who spent most of his time living in a tent for work. Hydro corridor maintenance, about 8 to 10 now hours north of Toronto. Other occupations that might have to camp for work include forest firefighters, utility maintenance, environmental observations, and the like.
Then there are backpacking trips that go to the next level by being an extended period of time. Those multi-day hiking trips where you'll be carrying all of your gear for a much longer distance and camping along the way. Whether you're taking on an end-to-end expedition of a popular trail like the Appalachian Trail, or even just doing a section of one of these huge ones like the Bruce Trail or the Pacific Crest Trail, or taking this list of amazing backpacking trips international, doing something like, I don't know, like the Inca Trail in Peru, or the Tour de Mont Blanc in Switzerland, or hiking the highlands of Iceland.
Allison, it sounds like you're adding to your bucket list as we speak.
Okay, maybe.
Okay, let me give it a try. There are also historic trails and travel routes, which can quite quickly put into perspective that what we consider recreation today was once a means to survival and many people's reality of everyday life.
Oh, yeah. Like thinking like the French River. Yeah,
exactly. So anyways, there are so many ways to camp, so many styles of camping, so many different things you can get out of camping.
Which is part of the reason why getting outside
and fireside
is just so great. And besides hopefully adding a couple of ideas to your bucket list and getting you excited for some upcoming podcast episodes this season, we hope we've given you a little bit of a taste of the many ways that you can camp. We really encourage everyone to get out there and give one of these many ways a try, whether you're going to dip your toe in with, you know, some glamping, or you're ready to strap on that pack and hit the trail for some backpacking. Getting into nature is all part of the fun.
We hope you enjoyed the first episode of season two. I'm forecasting heavy rain showers for our next episode.
And we'll tell you just how to get through camping in the rain. Until next time. That's a wrap on another episode. Thanks for listening.
Don't forget to like and subscribe to the Campfire Committee, Outside and Fireside, available on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts.
Remember to share this episode with others to help us expand the Campfire Committee community and pass on the love of camping and the great outdoors.
For more, check out our website, thecampfirecommittee.com, and find us on social media at The Campfire Committee.
And join our Facebook group, a place where you can share your favorite memories, places, and ideas when it comes to all things camping. Also, let us know what camping or outdoors topics you want to hear more about in future episodes, your camping stories, and any other feedback you've got.
Join us next time. Outside and fireside.
And until then, this campfire has ended.
Before we go, we'd like to thank Sue Logan, better known around here as Camper Sue, for her endless camping knowledge, support, and experience.
And Stephen Pavan, our all-in-one editing team. We couldn't do this without either of you.
And to all the extended members of the Campfire Committee, thank you.
All sound effects that are not our own are from thedevo.net.
Music from Epidemic Sound. For more details on all episodes, see our show notes.